When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition Comic Book Podcast, where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr. I don't know why I'm doing it this way. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
That's me. I'm here. I'm present, present for the holidays.
Yes.
Here we go.
It is a beautiful day, beautiful snowy day here in the wonderful Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, we got rain here in Chicago, but
it is a blanket of white with flakes.
How lovely.
Yes, it's actually quite nice. I like we're doing a podcast. Perfect day to do a podcast and not have to get out and do stuff.
Same.
So today on the program, we are going to be doing a classic of the genre, but one I am really uptight about how we're going to talk about it, just because, okay, we'll get into it, but we're going to be doing Tank Girl. And if you don't know Tank Girl, we'll try to explain it.
I believe this is a PG-13 podcast today.
This might be a hard R. we'll try to keep the language to the language to a minimum, but it should be an interesting conversation. First off, at the time of this recording, just a couple days ago, one of our favorite performers, musicians, poets passed away, Shane McGowan of Pogue's fame. Brian, you wanted to talk about Shane, so.
Well, I didn't want to go into it too much. I mean, it's a huge loss for music. I mean, like you said, he's a poet. He could dance you in the gutter and make you fall in love, apparently heaven needed a trickster poet. So, I mean, the reason...
I was under the impression he fell from grace with God.
Well, but he was on the sick bed of Cacolin.
It's true.
Yeah. So, but, he was also a rake at the gates of hell. So
that's right.
The reason I bring it up, first of all, I'm having a lot of sads. There's Tom Waits and then there's Shane McGowan, in my estimation. So the reason why anybody who reads comics would care about the death of Shane McGowan, other than the fact that he was the last great poet, is, of course, the fact that, if you read any, and I'm going to give a little bit of a hint as what's coming, if you've ever read Vertigo, if you've ever read any of the works of Grant Morrison, or Garth Ennis, or any of the great, sort of British, writers that came over, not just with 2000 AD and not just with other things, but in Vertigo specifically, very specifically Hellblazer, other great comics written by, again, those guys, Neil Gaiman, Jamie Hewlett, or Hallett. The Hoag's references that exist in comics are pretty strong. He was clearly an influence on a lot of the writers that we love here at the Collected Edition. And I think a lot of other comics and writers that other folks love as well. I mean, I tried to do a search of Pogue's references and I just gave up. There's a lot. There's a lot out there. And the fact that he influenced a whole generation of, would we call them edgy? I don't know what, particularly British and Irish and Scottish writers in the comics field. And there are whole issues out there that some of these have written that are based around Pogue's lyrics. So, and Shane McGowan lyrics. So does the death of a musician matter to the Collected Edition? Yes, it does. It does because it mattered to the writers that we often cover. It's a very sad day. It's a major force in music, someone who's never existed before and probably won't again outside of Pretenders, not the band, but folks who wish they were as cool or as interesting as Shane McGowan. So it's a sad day, not just in music but in comics. I'm sure that the numerous writers have expressed and given their kudos out there on the social medias.
Well, I mean, and not only does it, you said it matters to the creators of the comics that we're talking about. It matters to the hosts of this show.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Shane McGowan, I remember being in high school and being given a copy of Rum, Sodomy, and the Lash and thus thought, okay, this is My life, there's pre getting that album and post getting that album in my
very
life.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just this hybrid. I mean, it's going to be very, as far as aesthetic and, you know, temperament, it's going to be, you'll see it in the comic we're going to talk about today.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, but it's there's
the Pogues reference somewhere in the comic. I can't remember exactly where it is, but there is a reference to the Pogues in the comic we're covering today.
Yes. You notice that it's that punk sensibility, but then kind of combined with traditional music and traditional, I don't want to say traditional values, but you know what I mean? Shane McGowan and the Pogues in general, they really brought something new to music, to, you know, just an attitude. And he was an individual. I mean, there's many times he was famous enough and beloved enough worldwide, let alone in Ireland. He could have sold out and been, you know, just rested on his laurels, but he didn't. He rested on a bottle of whiskey.
Yes. Ultimately, should he have lived as long as he did? Probably not, but he did. And, you know, one of the most interesting things to me is whenever he would duet with female singers, it was always these angelic voices with his rough, very non-traditional singing voice. Singing maybe is, you know, and it always created that great juxtaposition of, you know, the angel and the demon. And it was, it's a testament to his songwriting that people lined up and wanted to sing with him and play with him. And his
charisma and his, yes, it was a non-traditional singing voice, but he still had a power to his voice that could hold up, even with, you know, these like angelic voices, as you said, his raw, gruff scratch could still hold up with it. Yeah. And I mean, it's the, you know, for me, it's the Holy Trinity of Dylan Waits and Shane McGowan, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Yeah. So Shane will be missed.
So thanks for letting us, thank you folks for letting us opine over a much beloved musician in our
last couple of days. I've had
in our comic book podcast.
Yes. Last couple of days, I've had a soundtrack playing in my house of mostly Pogues. Pogues and Popes. So anyway, let's move
on.
On other topics. Let's again, everything's just sort of symbiotic this time around because we're talking about punky stuff.
Yeah.
Punky alternative, because it seems that Vertigo might come back.
There's a rumor out there.
Yeah.
As of right now, it's a rumor.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense. I don't know if you remember several years now, when Vertigo ended, we talked about it on this very program.
Yes, we did, probably.
Yeah, no, we did. We did indeed. And as I recall, I haven't gone back to listen to it, because it was right at the time that they were doing Black Label, and both of us were very confused at the fact that why start Black Label when you have Vertigo? Vertigo is essentially what Black Label is.
Right. Or, well, I mean, Black Label was there. So I think it was the woman who was in charge at the time of DC at Warner Brothers or whatever the entity, it's hard to keep track of who's buying who and who owns who anymore, didn't like all the various kind of sub-labels that were existing, you know, and Vertigo was limping. I mean, the Karen Berger leaving was a huge deal. I mean, Karen Berger was the face of Vertigo, or not the face of, but the guiding hand. And Vertigo had pretty strongly fallen on hard times. The stuff that was coming out on Vertigo was not, there were some good titles, but there were some titles that were just like, eh. And there was like issues with creator owned. Vertigo was skating on its trade collections at that point. Sandman, Hellblazer, Fables, what have you. So Swamp Thing and various others. And so a lot of those trades were evergreen. And so it was like new content coming out in Vertigo was not as inspired. It wasn't as edgy because like Image had come in and Image had kind of changed from, you know, Rob Liefeld sort of era. And Image was starting to do like, and continue to do some incredible creator-owned stuff. And now Boom has come in and is doing some of that. There's a lot of titles on Boom and Image that could easily have been Vertigo titles.
Yeah, Dark Horse as well.
A dark horse. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know, Vertigo was the, you know, was the place to go if you were going to get edgy stuff. And Image was a place if you wanted to go to get Shatterstar.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that style of art, I mean.
Yeah.
But, you know, and yeah, and things changed over time. But, you know, my argument back in the day was, you know, well, you're going to be starting this, you know, DC Black Label and promoting it heavily. Just do that with Vertigo. You already have the built-in audience. Start adding. I don't know. That was my argument back in the day. And it seems to be that's what they're going to do now. They're going to do. And again, rumor. It seems that Black Label will be slowly phased out.
Right.
In favor of
Black Label is different, though. Like, so they collapsed because, you know, now we have the Sandman universe going on right now with
J.P.
Tinion, and that got mixed in with the Black Label. But also you just have all those kind of Batman's penis type stuff. Callback. You know, so Black Label really feels like they're just dumping anything that's mature content. So you get that great the Kyle Starks Peacemaker, which was so much fun because it's Kyle Starks and Kyle Starks is a genius. But, you know, anything that's like where they get to say the F word, you know, it's just dumped into Black Label, which is fine. And a lot, some of the Tom King stuff was Black Label. I think Danger Street is Black Label. Correct me if I'm wrong. You know, and so it was just Black Label just became a catch-all. So you'd have superhero stuff that you can't do in the mainstream. And then you throw in a Hellblazer or you throw in, you know, Lemire's Green Hell Swamp Thing. But that's
what Vertigo was back in the day.
But that's what Vertigo was.
Yeah.
It wasn't Peacemaker. It wasn't all the Batman Black Label stuff that's going on. It was, you know, it was the Swamp Thing. It was the truly edgy stuff where it was like creators creating interesting stories with interesting characters.
You know,
it didn't have to be because there were potty words or boobs or whatever in it. It was because it was storytelling that was different than your average Justice League.
Right. We talked about that when we did Spectre, which was, it started as doing interesting, edgy, you know, adult oriented storylines. And it just became this thing of like, oh, we can do adult oriented, edgy stuff. So they leaned on that rather than leaning on the more mature stories. They leaned on the, what we, you know, we can show boobies and we can say dirty words and we can have all this sex and violence in there. No, it started as, you know, let's do really genuinely good stories that can't be done in a, you know, kid-oriented comic book.
Yeah. So the question, though, is, does Vertigo need to come back? And the article I read or that I saw where this rumor was put out was it had to do with nostalgia from the from certain executives. And the nostalgia, I think, was money. It was more money nostalgia than story nostalgia, because again, they're looking back at the evergreens. They're looking back at the how good those trades sold. You know, if they do bring it back, what does it mean? Are they going to give creators the same sort of deals that Image gives creators? My guess is no, still.
No, of course not, because it's DC. I would say the same thing about Marvel as well. But it is a brand, you know? People say Vertigo, and it does conjure up all these things you think of: Sandman, Hellblazer, Swamp Thing, on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Preacher.
Yeah. Watchmen, for that matter, because I bet most people bought their first trades of Watchmen in Vertigo form.
Yeah, it got kind of collapsed later into Vertigo. Yeah. And then now Black Label, probably. I mean, if you buy a Watchmen trade, does it have a Black Label dress on it? I don't know. I haven't needed to buy Watchmen. Oh,
exactly.
I have four different editions of Watchmen on my shelf.
It doesn't matter what label it comes under. It always comes under Alan Moore's scorn.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Vertigo is concerned, it's a great imprint. And so much, if it comes back, it will have that marketing appeal and the nostalgic appeal. But it's also a way to do something fresh and move the company and storytelling along.
So whoever is the editor has to be, can they be Karen Berger? No, because they're, will it be horror oriented? Are they going to get James Tinian to give up all of his image work to come back and spearhead? I mean, he's kind of spearheading the Sandman universe right now. Whose hands does it land in? What creators are they getting? Are they going to get some young, unheard of creators, which was Vertigo originally? You know, who is Neil Gaiman? I don't know, some British writer.
You could fold in Hill House with this stuff. I mean, Joe Hill, that was a big deal when all the horror stuff is going to go under. But that's not, as far as I know, it's kind of chugging along. But that could go under Vertigo. I mean, there's so much that could go under the blanket of Vertigo, and be given some more cachet.
Who's the audience though?
Me.
Yeah.
And I can sustain an entire company, sure.
Is the audience 50? What's the appeal at this point when really it's, the only way they're bringing in younger readers are through some of their all ages imprints or, manga style stuff. Who's buying this? Who wants it? Yeah, you and I, sure. Or do we? I don't know. I don't know what that means. I don't know who. Is it just, are they just bringing Vertigo back to slap the Vertigo tag back on all their trades? If that's the case, that's fine. But if they're not going to be putting out interesting content, then, what's the point?
Well, there's an opportunity is what it is you bring it back, you get the initial, hoopla of Vertigo's back. Yay. And then you get it slapping, like you said, slapping the label on all the adult oriented comics. But there's the opportunity now to say, okay, we have Vertigo. We can really run with this. And you can, the appeal of working, of having Vertigo on your comic could draw creators in instead of going to Boom, instead of going to Image. They might want to go to Vertigo.
Maybe.
The cachet of having.
But if the tag is just the tag and the rights of the creators are still corporately owned, then what's the appeal to the creators if they're just going to be, the idea of Vertigo is to create new things as opposed to signing on just with an exclusive contract with Marvel or DC or whatever, and then you don't own what you create. But if you're still not owning what you created Vertigo and you can own what you created Image or Boom,
Yeah, the possibilities make me dizzy.
Yes.
Because it's Vertigo. Thank you, everybody.
Is it just going back to the well one more time when the well is empty?
Well, that is comic books in a nutshell right there. Yeah. speaking of comic books in a nutshell, Brian, you brought something up earlier. You have concerns, and that is our comic books.
Am I Susan Collins?
Yes. You brought up, we were talking about this off mic, about our comic books, new comic books being given a chance.
Right. In keeping with sort of, this flows kind of.
You had the example of the currently running Avengers Incorporated has been canceled before the end of its run.
Yeah.
Elaborate.
Well, I think it's just interesting. So, I've been reading Avengers Inc. It's fun. It's Al Ewing, who is a major creator, right? Mm-hmm. He's a big name now. And Leonard Kirk, who is a great artist. So they started this fun little comic, Avengers Inc. And it's like it's a procedural. It's kind of mirroring the old Avengers, the TV show, not the Marvel comic property. It's a fun comic. Is it significant? Is it gonna blow anybody away? No. But, it's a small little comic that was doing kind of a fun thing. I'm sure the audience wasn't very large for it.
I will admit, I dropped off. I read the first two issues and said, that was fine. It wasn't for me, and I dropped off. So
maybe this isn't the best example, but, I noticed that it was, it was supposed to be at least six issues, and they're canceling it after five. So is the story going to get done? Is the fifth issue going to be one of those really awful things that we always get when they cancel a series and then the creator has to wrap everything up in 20 pages and it just reads terribly? Because should Avengers Inc. have survived? I don't know. Apparently nobody was buying it. Were people not buying it because it wasn't interesting, or were people not buying it because it wasn't promoted? Or
no one knew it existed. It
wasn't given a chance. I don't know. This comic would not make my top 10 list. It wasn't, you know, I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. I didn't get excited when a new issue came out. That's fine. And it may be a comic book that should have been canceled. But at the same time, it reminded me of, like, there's this vast wasteland of comics that start and never get traction, mm-hmm. and are not promoted in a way that can gain new readers. You know, it's the infamous, the first issue always sells well, and then comics die.
Yeah, then it drops off. As that completist mind of, even I want to see, okay, we're supposed to go 6 issues, let it go 6 issues, and then you can cancel it, but at least it has a story arc, you know.
Right. Because then you can collect in a trade, and someone who is into Al Ewing because of his other great work will go back and be like, okay, what else has Al Ewing written?
Yeah, you could get something of, I'm trying to think of an example, but the thing that keeps popping up to me is Sandman. Those first few issues of Sandman are rough.
They're rough. It's not Gaiman's greatest work.
No, it's Gaiman trying to find his feet and, like, who is this character? What am I trying to do here?
Yeah. And I always tell people when they're like, oh, I should read the Sandman, I was like, you got to start at the beginning, and you got to get through the first couple story arcs.
Yeah. Preludes and Nocturnes. You have to read it, but it's going to be rough going at times.
Because it's not his best work. But if that had come out now, it wouldn't make it past 3 or 4 issues. We wouldn't have gotten the kindly ones, or we wouldn't have gotten, you know, we wouldn't have gotten all the great stuff that came after.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we wouldn't have gotten Sandman. Like, the Sandman is this pinnacle of comic book greatness, you know. Mm-hmm. Everyone puts that at the top of the pantheon, mm-hmm. and rightfully so. It's a great comic book. But right. Yeah, but it wouldn't have been given a chance. I don't think that Avengers Incorporated is going to be,
suddenly
become this great thing, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it never even had a chance. And that's so frustrating. And I have to say, I feel like Marvel is slightly worse on this than DC. And I'm not giving DC a pass because they have, you know, issues as well. But it feels like every time I see a Marvel title come out, I was like, oh, well, that's going to last 4 issues. Because it just feels like the plug is pulled so quickly. The one person I will give a little bit of credit to is, and people are going to, like, get mad as heck on this, Dan Didio, for all of his flaws, man, he would try to let a comic book, like, we had Jonah Hex for how many years? There is no way those Jonah Hex comics sold well at all. But he was like, we need Jonah Hex. We need a Western. We need a genre comic book coming out monthly from DC. And, you know, I love those Jonah Hex comics that came out. Palmiotti and whoever was where, you know, he even got, like, Darwin Cook to do some art on some of those. But it was like, there's no way now you introduce a Jonah Hex comic. I mean, why would you? Because you wouldn't promote it. No one would buy it. You wouldn't give it a chance. It would, if you announced a Jonah Hex comic, unless it was written by Neil Gaiman, it's like, there's no way it wouldn't last it.
Yeah. Jonah Hex by James Tynion would probably garner some interest. Right. I know it's a very strange, I talk about Marvel now. I look at it as it's a good thing and a bad thing. Like, they're just putting out titles constantly. There's too many. At the same time, it's nice that they keep trying new things, but they're not letting it run its course. So is it better to have a smaller amount of comics being put out? I don't know. I mean, I like giving things a chance.
Yeah.
They give it a chance, but not enough of a chance.
Yeah.
it's a little bit difficult. You know, back in the day, in the 70s, we've talked about this before, where there would be mid-level titles. You had your Avengers and your Spider-Man, right. And they sold great. But then you'd have Daredevil and, you know, Submariner. They sold okay, but mm-hmm. that was the training ground. That's like, okay, well, these sell okay. Let's put our new writer on this.
Right, and it was a chance for artists and writers to really
Yeah, to learn their craft and to hone their style, find their voice and their or their, you know, yeah, find their artistic feet. And then
regardless of what you feel about the guy, I mean, you know, if some cat named Frank Miller who had like just a few, you know, credits and on, you know, Moon Knight and whatever else he was, or is that Sienkiewicz? Daredevil was not a hot selling comic.
No, not at all. And so many people got their start on Steve Gerber, one of my favorites, wrote on Daredevil, and his run is not highly loved by any chance, but he got a chance to get in there and say he figured out who Steve Gerber was,
right?
And then moved on to other titles and made his name that way. It's a different market now.
Can't fiscally sustain books that are not making or losing money, but you know, I mean,
comics were cheaper to produce and distribute at the time.
It's very expensive now. People complain about the price of comics and. Like, I get it, but, you know, the idea that you just, you know, you should be able to get a comic book for 75 cents now is ridiculous. Paper costs and, you know, paying the creators. How about that?
Yeah. And the art is so much more sophisticated now. Right. Yeah, people might get mad at me for that, but it is. There's so much going on. Just the coloring process is so much more sophisticated now. It's a different market. It's different.
It's just disgusting when you have 30 X-Men comics and 30 Batman comics. You know, you don't have room or time to develop smaller idea comics that you know need some time to grow. Again, it's a corporate decision. It's a bottom line decision, but it's frustrating because it now has become bottom line decisions as opposed to creative decisions.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we'll, you know, just, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. And the way things are now, it's like, but you see other publishing companies who allow for like growth. I mean, you know, Phonogram, you had, you know, these guys that nobody had ever heard of in any real way, you know, it's like, okay. And I understand Image is a little bit different because the artists pay for the writer and the artist and everybody pays for everything ahead of time. And I know that the business model is vastly different, but it still feels like Image is willing to step out and at least help foster some of this stuff.
Well, Image has its problems too. How many Image titles just stop? Not because no one's buying it, but because creators move on.
We're looking at you, Jonathan Hickman, and your 20 unfinished Image titles.
Yes, I could finish this or make a chart. Let's make a chart. love Jonathan Hickman. Sorry,
throwing any shade. So I don't know. I don't have any answers. And again, I'm not here to defend Avengers Inc. as the standard for which it was a small little comic, but it was written by a superstar writer that didn't find its footing and didn't even get to finish.
Yeah, let it finish. That's six issues. You're Marvel and DC. You got enough money. You can do six issues. If nothing else, for the collect, think of the collectors.
Think of the collective. Think of the people who are trying to like do podcasts about collected editions, for Pete's sakes.
I know, for God's sakes. So we have no answers. Yes, that was two men rant for a while. Speaking of ranting, let's take a break. And when we come back, I don't know how we're going to talk about Tank Girl, but we will.
Yep.
Here it comes. Yeah. All right. Back in a second.
And we're back. So for today's topic, Paul, you have selected Tank Girl. My goodness. Would you like to tell us a little bit about this?
Maybe. Have Have you ever wondered what anarchy would look like if it were in comic book form? Well, the answer is, it looks like Tank Girl. Tank Girl is a punk rock fever dream created by artist Jamie Hewlett and writer Alan Martin for Deadline magazine in 1988. It was a frenetic cacophony of a comic book that didn't so much cross the line of decency and good taste. It erased that line completely and said, "Line? What line? I don't see a line." Tank Girl didn't play by conventional storytelling rules and narrative structure. In fact, it dismissed them completely in favor of a chaotic blend of manic action, crude humor, substance abuse, and a profusion of contemporary British pop culture references that can simply be baffling. The story, and I mean that in the loosest sense of the word, is centered on Tank Girl, a girl who lives in and drives a tank through a post-apocalyptic Australian wasteland with her mutant kangaroo boyfriend, Booga, her ex-boyfriend, Stevie, and a stuffed toy called Camp Koala, who sadly meets a tragic end. After being unable to fulfill a mission for an unnamed organization, she is pursued by various bounty hunters. After that, stuff happens. Beer is drunk, violence is perpetrated, sex is had. And I want to emphasize that none of this matters. The plot, such as it is simply a vehicle for Hewlett's intense, often psychedelic art to attack you from the page, while Martin fills every nook and cranny of each panel and gutter with vulgar jokes and non sequiturs. As for the character of Tank Girl herself, she's something else. Beautiful and gross, crude, dirty, a little mean, and more than a little psychotic. She's not very bright, but she's smarter than everybody else. Tank Girl doesn't fit into any traditional stereotypes or conform to any label we may give her. Tank Girl simply is. Your enjoyment of this comic will be based on individual tolerance. You will either be highly amused by the antics on the page or deeply offended by them, sometimes within the same panel. As a whole, Tank Girl is an unparalleled achievement, an unbridled, uncensored work of raw creativity that assaults your senses and pummels good taste. And in all honesty, I don't know if it's a work of pure genius or adolescent trash, but I have a feeling it's probably both. Brian, what do you think of Tank Girl?
Oh, you know, I've loved Tank Girl for a long time. I mean, you know, it's you know, especially for folks of a certain age. I mean, it's you know, she was, you know, we all kind of, if we didn't know a Tank Girl, we wished we did, and then would regret knowing them within minutes. But
I went to art school in San Francisco in the 1980s. I knew some Tank Girls, which was great. It was a thrilling, exhilarating experience.
I mean, I think, I don't want to say that, like, I don't know if Tank Girl could exist without Riot Girl.
Did Riot Girl come first?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I thought that maybe they were simultaneous.
Wait, what years are we talking about? No, wait, no, I'm sorry. 1988. No, so let me.
Yeah, 88 to 94 is basically the Hewlett-Martin run.
So, cancel that. delete.
there was definitely a movement at this time. I don't know which wave of feminism it was. Second, third.
Well, and but, I don't, you know, so I guess what I should say is Tank Girl has like sort of the early iteration of like what would, you know, become, you know, sort of the Riot Girl aesthetic.
Yes.
Which was a big giant FU to any convention, particularly male convention, which is interesting because this was written by and drawn by two men. So, but, you know, there is, I mean, you know, Hewlett in particular came up through the whole music industry. He obviously is, some folks will know, he was a creator of Gorillaz.
That's primarily how he's known now.
Yeah, these days. But I mean, it's
there's a lot of pausing going on, and that's exactly how, like, my notes are basically full of like, how do I say that?
it's hard because it's, you know, the character is completely amoral. I wouldn't even, like, anarchism at least has a center from which to build from.
I want a t-shirt that says anarchism as a center.
But, but it's just with Tanker, there's no center. It's complete id gone.
Yes, mad. There's no morality. There's no ethics. It's just chaos, which is her appeal. Yeah.
And it's fascinating. I mean, I love this as a younger gentleman, very much so, because, you know, I was a punk rock kid. I mean, this was just, like I said, it was like, I want to know this person, but I'm terrified of this person. Tank Girl's hard to talk about.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I did some cursory, because I know what my perception, like I gave you my feelings on Tank Girl. She's awful, but I love her. So, but I kind of did some cursory, you know, research and looked around the internet and see like, well, how is she perceived, the character? How is the character perceived in the right world? And it's all over the place, man. There are people who see her as a feminist icon, LGBTQ icon, but also like as a male gaze, a misogynist, a creation of misogyny, gaze. I think all of those things exist at once, which is what makes the character, unique. Yes, it is. And that's the thing. And a big criticism comes from the fact that, it was written and drawn by two men. And, what were their intentions? But I just reading this, I think the intentions are clear, which is there are no intentions. It's just jokes. And
if there are intentions, they're puerile.
Right. That's the thing. Is it adolescent trash? Yeah. Is it genius? Oh, yeah.
It's two dudes like punk rock dudes just pissing all over the page. It should be noted, the art is fantastic.
Oh, the art is glorious. Yes. And it's just all over the place.
And it's full. It's very cartoony. And there's a scratchiness to it sometimes, which I think is very interesting.
The art, he gets honed. You can see Jamie Hewlett like kind of honing his craft as this goes along. And it goes from being very scratchy and crude to being kind of smooth and beautiful towards the end.
It starts to, and you see that later too. And you also see that in later iterations when other artists also kind of take over the idea. Ashley Wood did at least a couple arcs of Tank Girl. And, Ashley Wood's art is very interesting. Some people don't care for their stuff, but it is interesting also to see it in other iterations. I guess we could talk about what happens on the page.
It's an interesting thing. The first few issues, there is an attempt at a narrative.
Right.
Where, it starts out, she's working for some organization that she has to go off on a mission to save the president from pooping his pants, which...
And she's, and it should be noted that her superior on this is Sergeant Small Unit.
Yes. The jokes are not sophisticated, let's say. It's all, and they even said it. There's parts as this goes along. There's breaking the fourth wall. Tank Girl yells at Hewlett for drawing her a certain way. Yeah, I mean, and it just says, what should we do here? Oh, we'll add another knob joke. Yeah, so they're fully aware that they have. There's no rules. Nothing's happening. it's chaos.
It's complete chaos. And that's what makes it fun. And I should say right at the bat, this comic is fun.
Oh yeah.
We start off with, it's the kangaroos.
Kangaroo biker gangs.
Anthropomorphic kangaroos.
Yes. In a Mad Max wasteland.
Right. Cause initially supposed to be, I think, ideally this was supposed to be a post-apocalyptic Australia. This is Australia, if we haven't clarified that yet.
It's they say it's Australia, but it's all the humor and references is contemporary British television and personalities.
So, well, Australia is
but anyway, you know what I mean. I guess Australians would probably be mad at you for that, but yes, no, they're all part of the Commonwealth, I suppose. But
the very beginning of this is fascinating because It literally, so there's an attack. So these kangaroos attack some kind of like posh barbecue party, and Tank Girl is trying to collect the bounty on these kangaroos. And so she's watching this as the kangaroos attack this barbecue party.
Next on Fox, when kangaroos attack.
And so, what, you know, I mean, this sets the stage. So she drives her tank off a cliff, ends up running over everybody.
Yes.
Not just the kangaroos, but all the people.
And it should be noted, just very right off the bat, physics is non-existent in this comic. So, yes, yeah, she drives her tank off a cliff straight down, but then lands perfectly fine.
Yeah.
It's cartoon logic.
And then she chases. So she runs over everybody, kills everybody. And then she chases like the main, or the Rocky, I believe, Rocky kangaroo. She chases him across the desert or the outback or what have you. And when she finally catches up to them, she has sex with him and then shoots him.
Yeah. So that actually sets the...
There's your introduction to Tank Girl.
Yes. That sets you up for the character. This will be her going forward. Yes. So she attempts to fulfill this mission of stopping the president from pooping his pants, which she fails.
President Hogan, which of course is supposed to be Paul Hogan.
G'day.
Yeah. There's a lot of Crocodile Dundee, Paul Hogan references throughout this.
Yes. And Paul Hogan is the dump master. So anyway, she gets halted along the way from fulfilling her mission, and Paul Hogan does in fact poop his pants on television. And so a bounty is put out on her. And then we get a next few issues of several bounty hunters going after her and trying to hunt her down. And we get this series of bounty hunters who are incompetent, you might say.
Another running gag is like people's genitalia growing too big.
Well, this is actually really bright. So she has a gun that can, when you shoot it, it increases your scrotum to what? 1,000 times.
Right. There's two different. So the gun is 10,000 times.
Yes.
The size, or it's the testicles grow 10,000 times, yes. Which of course leads her to, she fires it off into the air.
Well, she fires it into the air just because it makes a cool sound. Listen, boop, 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 boop. And it hits a passing plane.
With some religious figures, the God boxes.
Yes.
Whoever they are.
Well, we have, it is actually quite a good joke because she does that. And then the one storyline concludes and then a plane crashes. And when they find out, we don't know what happened. The pilot just, his testicles grew and he couldn't see the controls.
So they crash.
Yeah. And again, I do want to emphasize, this is not sophisticated humor.
No, but it's kind of funny.
No, it's very funny.
Which of course then leads to, so the plane crashes and these two guys get out and they're trying to go to a Christmas party.
Yeah, because they're going to the birth of the next Messiah.
The birth of the next Messiah. Which of course, so Tank Girl takes them and then they crash through the roof. She crashes the tank through the roof and like, yes. Right into a nativity scene.
I don't know how to, again, I'm losing words. I don't know how to talk about this.
I mean it's hard. But this kind of sets all of this sets the stage, because the very next part of this
quote unquote storyline,
right, is that because she's being hunted, so she has to she needs a face transplant, which her buddy Stevie takes him to his dad or a friend or whatever, who uses voodoo to change people's bodies and essentially to change her face. And so, of course, there's this humorous bit. Visually, it's great visual gags of her changing size, her head changes, her visage changes.
This is all very reminiscent, by the way, this like of just underground art in general, yeah. Like underground comics. This is
old, yeah.
And Steve, you know, Bashky's kind of visual style. Yeah, it's very much Jamie Hewlett's thing. So but it's reminiscent of that. Yeah.
Yeah. But so because her body keeps changing size or whatever, it leads to, so Sergeant Small Unit is going to capture her because she drives him nuts.
He keeps having visions or dreams of her
with just missiles for breasts.
Yeah, and just basically killing him in horrible ways. He keeps having these dreams. So
what happens is because her body keeps altering because of the voodoo, when Sergeant Small Unit finally shows up with his gang of like mercenaries to take her out, her breasts don't grow into missiles, but they do grow really large and knocks him out.
Yes.
At which point he kills himself.
Well, he obviously, since she keeps changing size, he thinks he's still in a dream, so he kills himself to wake himself up, which is bizarre, you know. But then hit the mercenaries, they all say, oh, we must, he said we're in a dream, so this is what we got to do. Okay. They all kill themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's terribly nihilistic.
Oh, it's horrible.
I mean, the whole, you know, I guess we need to keep mentioning the fact that I don't know if we brought up nihilism, but nihilism is a massive part of this comic.
Yes. Well, nihilism or just, you know, absurdism. There is no point to anything. So, yeah. Is it nihilism or existentialism? Or is it absurdism? Or a combination of all three?
It's all of these things. Yeah. I mean,
punk rock, man. It is just, this is the epitome of punk rock right here. And after that, we start getting further and further away from narrative and just things happening. And this is where we start to get into, you know, breaking the fourth wall. For instance, Jamie draws Tank Girl without a shirt. So she rips up pages and sticks them over her breast to, you know, to thwart him, basically. Which is
right. And she has a conversation with Martin and Hewlett throughout the she has several conversations with them throughout the comic.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know if the fourth wall even exists. I don't know if there's a wall. Yeah, I don't think there's a wall to break.
Yeah, they're just in the desert. No walls exist. But she meets a guy with a magical dream coat and then eventually tears up the dream coat in order to
disguise her breasts.
To make a shirt for herself.
Yeah, it's God's dressing gown, which was recovered by Indiana Potato Jones.
I'm glad you wrote down all these names because I did not.
Who is clearly out of his element.
He is obviously killed because, of course, Tank Girl just kills people for no reason. He also has Wolverine claws. Did you notice that?
I did. Well, you know, he's Australian. Oh, he's Canadian, right? But, you know, played by Australians. And anyway.
it's anticipating Hugh Jackman by at least a decade.
Well, and don't forget, like, also this issue is... this is when she first hooks up with Booga, because so Booga was sent to steal her underwear.
Yes, as an initiation to his biker gang.
And of course, then they end up, and poor Booga throughout all of this. Plus,
Booga gets, he's put upon.
Yes.
But of course, I mean, obviously, since she has God's dressing gown, obviously the devil comes looking for her, who is kind of like a surfer devil with a pompadour haircut.
Yeah.
And yeah,
does the whole please allow me to introduce myself? Exactly. Is it I'm a man of beer and taste?
And this gets into like there's so many references here. Like I know that's a reference, but I wasn't expecting Mike Smith. Who's Mike Smith?
I don't know who Mike Smith is. I don't know who Dan Green is either. But you know, it's like
when you when you Google Mike Smith, there's a lot of people named Mike Smith.
There are. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So. The majority of the references in this comic went straight past me. I understand that they are jokes and they probably are offensive. So,
and there are so many panels, like so many panels in this that like have all kinds of running gags and the main panels you have to read carefully.
There's so many little like throwaway lines just stuck on the sides and on, you know, between panels. There's
what
so many
beers that they're drinking.
Yes, and there's books on the shelf. Each one has a different spine label. There's bricks on walls that just have names and various things written on them.
And a lot of the sub-characters also have little off-to-the-side, like, comments.
Yeah, so there's, you know, there's Camp Koala, who is a stuffed koala bear, and there's Squeaky Toy Rat, What's the little elephant thing?
Hard, precocious,
Mr. Precocious. Mr. Precocious. Yeah. Yes. Who yeah. just has little, who just has little comments to, you know, to the reader, little asides. None of this makes sense, but it's just fascinating to read.
I would be fascinated if anybody out there like gets every reference.
You know, I wonder if Hewlett and Martin get every reference. There's just so much. I mean, you get, so the devil makes a deal for Tank Girl's soul for the retrieval of the of the dream coat, of God's waistcoat, and she is given three wishes, which she wishes to be A, on Dame Edna's show. There's a reference.
Which I got. I was lucky I got the Dame Edna reference.
I think Dame Edna is known globally. So she gets to be a, that's one wish. The second wish hasn't aged well.
Mm.
Yes.
No, sir.
Yes. The second wish is to be charitable like Jimmy Savile.
Anyone who has ever worn the coat has to be charitable. Yes. This is her way to thwart Satan from using, you know, the dressing gown for nefarious purposes. So she wishes that everyone who has worn it has to like be charitable, like Jimmy Savile,
which kind of fits in with Satan. I'll give you that.
Yes.
But this was a long time before we knew who he was.
Right. At least those of us in the States.
And then her third wish is to have a gigantic beer.
Right. Instead of wishing for, you know, a whole bunch of like really interesting, important things. No, these are the three things she wishes for. And the last one is a gigantic lager that's bigger than her.
After the devil has been thwarted and the wishes have been made, now we get into, it's not really a plot per se. It's more just like, here's a pretense, crazy shit happens. And
this is where things kind of, it gets very, it's episodic.
Yes, absolutely. So this one, well, we get a two-part.
So we get a, go ahead.
Here we go. So now we get into a two-part story, I'm using air quotes, about it's Tank Girl's birthday, and the mafia has taken control of all the lager, all the beer, and has put on the market only their own weak beer called Spunk. So Tank Girl is very upset that her refrigerator is full of Spunk.
Yes, and there's a long narrative where they attempt to use the word Spunk beer as much as possible.
Yes, and then there's a little caveat from the narrator saying, "Hey, we had no idea that this word had a double entendre." Yeah,
yeah. Everybody's forced to drink Spunk.
And nobody likes drinking Spunk. So anyway, for her birthday, Tank Girl is joined by Jet Girl and Sub Girl. Jet Girl flies a jet and Sub Girl drives a submarine. Yes.
I mean, I appreciate that the comic makes sure that we understand from the jump what each character represents.
Yes. I am podcast boy. So anyway, once everyone is assembled, with Stevie and Booga, they all decide to mount an attack on the mafia in order to get the reserves of lager back, lager and beer. So they get little mini tanks.
It's a whole bunch of like little tanks.
Little mini tanks. But it's called the Australian Job, so they look like Mini Coopers, which I think is fucking brilliant. I'm sorry. Yes. Let me just say that again. I think that is brilliant. Should probably not drop so many F-bombs on this, but hey. It's Tank Girl, so fuck it. So they get little Mini Coopers in order to, like I said, get the beer back from the mafia.
They're invading Sydney.
The Sydney Opera House, to be
right.
A place that used to be used as an opera house, but now it's just a big warehouse. And now we get into, I think, is Jamie Hewlett kind of reaching, you know, he found his style. Mm-hmm. I think the art just goes... It just gets so good after this. The panels start getting broken There's double page spreads, to which he even says these double page spreads make it so much easier to draw a comic. and it's just his style just it's just on adrenaline at this point. I think it looks amazing. Yeah. You also get Tank Girl saying "suck on this fart face," which is brilliant as she shoots a gigantic gun. Yes.
Yeah, and this whole sequence, it's like a long action sequence. It finishes up the second issue. So this is because it's the Dark Horse part of this is they spread it out over four issues, but each issue has like three or four separate
sequences.
This is a reprint. This right. is a reprint of their work before. So, you know, Dark Horse had to like kind of chop it up and present it in like four issue series.
So, right. It's similar to how we, you know, we talked about the Doctor Who comic we did a few weeks back.
Right.
Which, you know, it happened in a magazine. So it was not full issues of a comic. They were just sort of one or two pages, basically, or right. three pages. And that's how this was in Deadline magazine. Yeah. And so that was kind of like a backup comic in Deadline. But
this whole heist, and, you know, I love a heist. You know, spreads out from the end of issue two into issue three. It's kind of nonstop. I mean, it's batshit.
Yeah, and it's great. And it's absolutely fantastic.
It's just Hewlett's going. You mentioned this, but Hewlett's just going crazy on this stuff. But they get the booze right, and so, but then they have to go through the streets of Sydney and the suburbs of Sydney to get out. And at some point they run and there's a lot of social commentary going on here. And my favorite is the giant burger. Right. So there's this restaurant, like some it's meant as a stand in for McDonald's, Burger King, Burger Chef, whatever you want to call it. There's this great scene. Talk about the fourth wall breaking. There's this great scene where they like run through like a burger joint. And there's a giant burger sort of that gets tossed up in the air and it's coming down to crash on them.
Well, it's aliens who have a giant burger and decide that they don't.
The burger, before the aliens get a hold of it, yeah, the burger goes flying up in the air and it's going to crash down on them. And so then we had the fourth wall break where it's the artists and author like sitting there talking about what they're going to do about this particular thing. So they decide that they're just going to have aliens. The aliens will swoop in and take up the giant burger because they need nourishment. And so they had this cliffhanger, but then the cliffhanger is solved by literally the fourth wall of like a scene where the writer and artist are talking about what to do, and they just decide, okay, we'll have these aliens come in. So the aliens scoop
that's
it
right
out
they're sitting around a table, like a writer's room table, having right, a conversation
like in,
yeah
like in Paris, you know, like around there. And so the aliens like get the burger and then take off, and you're like, okay, well, deus ex machina, right? I think they actually say deus ex machina in there, and someone says, what are you talking Latin? So then, you know, things go on and, you know, the tanks are racing away and everything's, you know, they're in the clear. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, so the aliens decide that the burger isn't nutritious. So they drop the giant burger out of their spaceship right on top of Tank Girl again, like hundreds of miles away.
Well, there's a tour bus with clueless comic book reviewers on their way to a Tossers convention, which they run off the road. There's so much in here.
Right.
There's one guy drinking a beer with a t-shirt that says, I hate Tank Girl, which they run over with a tank. Yeah, they're they get all the mini tanks back into the big tank. And then, of course, immediately throw the little mini tanks away because they don't need them anymore. And then that's when they get hit by the giant burger from space. Again, we're saying these words.
Why we love comics. And yes. So the tank is teetering on the edge of a cliff. And so in order to save themselves, they have to drink all the beer they stole.
And then they have no idea why they're in the position they're in. And the tank, of course, falls off the cliff anyway.
Falls off the cliff, which is fine.
Yes. It all works out well in the end by just ending. We get these really weird kind of interludes. I mean, beautiful art, fantastic art.
I kind of ignored those. It was basically pinups with text.
Yeah, but they're really, I don't know. I don't know if it's Martin or Hewlett that's doing the text in it, but they're just sort of very they're goofy and weird, but they're also kind of strange and weirdly, I don't know.
They veer towards touching, and touching, I don't mean like special touching. I mean like,
Not Jimmy Savile.
emotionally touching. And then you're like, like I was reading that and I was like, what the hell is this? I'm here for, booze and sex.
I kind of liked it. It's just one of those things. So you're there for the booze and the sex, and then, it's kind of late night and you're feeling some regret. You jot this stuff down, and then you wake up and go, let's get back to the booze and sex. Anyway, no, I thought it was, I found it really, they're interesting. I find it really fascinating that they chose to include that in here.
I'm kind of at this point, like we like to me, the Great Beer Heist is my favorite part of this comic.
And there are some panels or pages that are just absolutely stunning, beautiful, frenetic art, and then just cram-packed with so much dialogue and so many jokes and little things. This is the pinnacle of Tank Girl right there. Those two issues, I think, are, we could have just done the entire podcast on those two issues. They're
And
great.
I feel like the stuff that comes after, I mean, we could talk about it, but it doesn't have the same. So I feel like once this is done, it kind of peters out a little bit. We have some humorous bits,
Yeah,
but
we have Booga trying to be a boxer or Tank Girl forcing him to be a boxer.
So and it's funny, it's okay, it's you get it's her like just abusing poor Booga beyond belief for financial gain. And then there's that weird little bit about the sacred land.
Well, yeah, you have, it's in the future of the future where you have one settler, or not settler, native people. You have someone in the telling the story about how in the old days, evil white people were trying to take their land away. And then a goddess of the earth came and destroyed them and killed them horribly. But then you find out that it was Tank Girl.
Well, it's not clear, right? It's so the spirit is Tanicha, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Tanika, Tanicha, but there's just one panel where she's coming out of somebody's body that she's possessed, which is wonderfully gory and nasty in a very Tank Girl way. And it kind of looks like Tank Girl, but you have it you're looking at it in from behind. So I guess it's meant to insinuate that that's Tank Girl,
Well,
but
I kind of took it as that, this is how legends are. Like, she probably did something horrible to these people because she's Tank Girl. So she, and but over the years, over the generations, the story gets passed down and it becomes this, instead of just this anarchic, crazy person, psychotic person doing this, it becomes a goddess of the earth who protects the people. That's how I kind of took it. Like, this is how legends happen, which is, it's interesting.
it's kind of it feels a bit off for the comic, but I mean it's there it's very heavy social commentary.
Yes, it is. And these were political guys. It's not a highlight for me, but it's interesting. They tried something different. And then I guess the only other thing to go into would be the death of Camp Koala. They go play baseball with hand grenades or some kind of explosive.
Yeah, it looks like it was a hand grenade. This is so the final issue, as it was, is just basically like abusing Booga.
But
Yes.
Booga, but Booga and Stevie have a revenge, as it
They
were.
have a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a thing about a meteor. It doesn't
Right.
make
But
any
we need to
sense.
get.
None of this makes any sense. The only thing to say about these last few issues are they're really playing with how the comics are presented, because there's a lot of text. It's done in photographs. There's one issue is written as a letter from Tank Girl to her mom, with photographs attached to it. I find it really interesting that once the Australian job happens, and it's the, like I said, the pinnacle of Tank Girl. It's, oh, this is it. This is what it is. And then it was sort of, well, let's just experiment from here on in. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But it's always chaotic and it's always strange. They have a very, I mean, obviously it's a fake letters page of people writing in to tell them how great they are. And let's see that burger panel again. I don't want to just dismiss these last few issues because they are really you know, artistically valid, but they don't have the impact of, you're right, they don't have the impact of those, of the Australian job.
Right.
Storyline.
And I think that future issues of, it feels like they kind of ran out of gas a little bit here, but then they rejuvenated like later on and in future issues of Tank Girl. But I mean, you know, the next, the final collection is, you know, again, it's the baseball with hand grenades, which kills off Camp Koala, which leads them to go shopping for a new replacement for Camp Koala. And, you know, there's a lot of inside jokes and whatever, but it doesn't have like the same kind of weight.
It doesn't have that frantic,
right,
you know, chaotic nature that the right. earlier
it's just
issues
been going toy shopping, and then, you know, Booga and Stevie like snipe at each other a little bit, and Tank Girl's just like, screw you all. And it just, it's okay.
This leads directly into the movie. I don't hate the movie. It's an interesting effort.
But then it kind of it winds up with it's Booga's birthday, and Tank Girl doesn't want to buy him anything, so she finds out there's a meteor that's going to land.
It's going to hit the Earth and kill everybody. So
right,
yeah.
So she manipulates Booga and Stevie into doing a bunch of dumb shit, and she goes to get a tan. Of course, the meteor misses the Earth. But then Booga and Stevie find out that she was just abusing them. So they make a paper mache meteor and drop it on her head.
Yes. And then there's just a lot of abuse hurled at everybody.
And it's funny stuff. I mean, when you're reading it, but it's just kind of, it's all very there as opposed yes. to that sort of anarchic.
It's very anticlimactic, I guess.
Issues. Yeah.
It's just sort of like it builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it just sort of relaxes a little bit. It's
and obviously they go,
there is an analogy I could have made there, but I'm not gonna go there. But it's still Tank Girl, and you know, wow.
I think it's just a really interesting comic. Again, it's like we talk about the art, and we've mentioned that numerous times, but you know, it's just I think what is interesting. I don't know if this is good comics. I really don't. It's like you stated in your intro. It's like, is this great or is it awful? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Which I think was your conclusion. It's a little bit of both. I mean, it's the sheer level of sort of nihilism and is funny, but it also, at some point I got tired.
I agree. It's a real snapshot of this moment in time because, yeah. You know, there was a lot happening in the late 80s, early 90s, attitudes changing and political unrest. I mean, it's unlike today.
Right. No, not at all. Yeah.
Yes. No, but, and it was being reflected in art at the time, whether it be comic books, novels, movies, whatever, music for sure. And it was just this anarchic, you know, explosion of let's just rage against the machine. And this epitomizes that attitude.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's brilliant in that way, but you're right. It does get a bit, can we please take a break?
It's just, at some point you're exhausted by it all. And maybe that's my age. Maybe that's the amount of comics I've read. Both before and after, some of which are sharper than this, some of which are duller than this. It's really fun. And I mean, I think the character of Tank Girl is very iconic. It's amazing because she doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. And there's an argument to make she doesn't even care about herself. She just is alive. Yeah.
And that's important in a character, particularly in the way that, you know, the landscape changes a little bit in how we perceive heroes versus anti-heroes and what have you. I mean, I think this was a singular moment. Tank Girl is a very singular character. And I think that the character stands like at a weird precipice between, again, like the very serious nature of comics versus the goofy nature of comics versus the a very adult nature of comics versus the very cartoonish nature of comics. And Tank Girl really is strongly at the epicenter of that in a way that very few creations have been able to claim.
I agree. I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, and it deals with, I mean, it's heavily infused with countercultural ideas, political ideas. It's embracing pop culture while skewering it at the same time. It's doing a lot, but doing it in a very simplistic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also in a way that's sometimes too much. It's a lot to absorb.
Tank Girl is important in the history of comics. I think this is one of those seminal comics that you should read for sure. Right. But yeah, but like your mileage may vary depending on like how and when you come into this comic. But I read this in the 80s. I was on board 100%.
Oh yeah, same. Yeah, yeah. But that was I was coming at it from what I would call juvenilia. I mean, I wasn't, you know, I was becoming a young adult. And I'm certain my takeaways from Tank Girl when I was 16 are vastly different than my current takeaway.
Yes. Well, yeah, my current takeaway. There's a lot that I kind of cringe and shake my head at. But at the same time, I, you know, look at things and go, oh, this is just awesome. So,
right.
Yeah, it's like I said, mileage may vary, mixed bag. There's a lot to love and there's a lot to just say, come on, man. But yes, this is the punk rock in comic book form, and it's worth it for that alone.
Right.
Any more to say?
No, I think I've got it.
So I really enjoyed revisiting this and seeing it from a different perspective, but I'm good. So next time on an all new edition of the Collected Edition, we're going to postpone the next real episode until after the new year. We're in the first week of December of 2023 right now, but we are going to get together for the holidays, as it were. And we haven't made a decision yet, but sometime in the next couple of weeks, we're going to do a Christmas comic book. We haven't settled on which one just yet.
As we often do.
Yes. And it should be a short one. Yeah.
A very special holiday edition of the Collected Edition. Edition of the Edition.
Yeah. Additionally, we're going to pick a small little Christmas comic and talk about it. It'll probably be a much shorter episode. So yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah.
And then after that, we'll be back in a flash.
Spoiler.
Ooh. We'll see you in a couple weeks for our special holiday edition of the Collected Edition. And then we'll be back in a flash for our next
new episode. Okay. So see you in a couple weeks for the holidays. And then, but in the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading us. Leave a comment. Let us know if you know what? Go to our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, and leave some comments if you understand some of the references that we didn't quite get.
Right.
I'd love to know what some of them are. In the meantime, yeah, I'm not really doing Twitter or social medias anymore just because it's a rage-filled place of hate. But I'm on Blue Sky now, so maybe we'll start doing Blue Sky. I don't know. I
have no idea what that is, but all right, sounds good.
Yeah, it's an alternate to Twitter. But, yeah. So yeah. So anyway, let's just wrap this up. Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy-O production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.